y'all.
Hey, guys.
So, this is Zach.
And this is Stuart.
And this is the Backer Super Show. This is a book club episode.
That's right.
This is episode 7 of the book club. It is on Stephen King's The Shining from 1977.
Yeah. And if you didn't listen to our podcast on the movie, you should definitely give that a listen to.
Yeah. Yeah. So, basically, we're just going to talk about the history of this book and then the parts 1 through 5.
Yeah.
And then kind of refer back to the movie a little bit when we're comparing it to this book for our movie time.
Yeah, as it is strikingly different.
Yeah. So the book, this is King's third novel. Yeah. He, at this point, has written way more.
Yeah.
But at the time, he had just written Carrie and Salem's Lot.
Yeah.
And this is his first book in hardback. So this is the big step up for him as a writer.
Yeah, this was his sort of make or break book. This was going to kind
of... Yeah, like it's the first one where he, where the publisher has invested enough in him that they're going to go, okay, we'll put this in hardback because that costs way more to print.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was actually influenced by his stay at a real hotel in Colorado in 1974 called the Stanley Hotel.
Ah, I did not know that.
His struggle with alcoholism and sobriety are probably what led him to write this book.
Yeah.
King had a very famous substance abuse problem.
Yeah. I mean, he even says in one of his autobiographies, he doesn't really remember writing Salem's Lot because he was so strong.
See, I haven't heard that one. I've heard that he has said that he doesn't remember writing Cujo.
Oh, maybe it was Cujo.
Yeah, he doesn't remember writing Cujo at all.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's the one.
He also apparently does not remember. His only directing credit is for a movie called Maximum Overdrive based on one of his short stories. He apparently was so into cocaine, he does not remember making that movie at all.
Yeah. So he definitely had a big substance abuse.
Yeah. He also, for this book, wanted to... He had hit a level of wealth that he was probably unaccustomed to at this point because he had quit teaching and was writing full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, with that, in the 70s came alcohol and drugs and all that. But
it was the 70s,
He wanted to break out of Maine as a topic. So the story goes that he threw a dart at a map of the U.S., and he and his wife went there. And it just happened to land in a spot in Colorado.
Yeah.
And so they stayed at this hotel. It landed, actually, on Boulder, Colorado.
Hmm.
His wife went with him. They had just recently had, I think, Joe.
Yeah.
Joe Hill is his son. He's a writer, a fantastic writer in his own right. But he had just had a son that they had left with, I think, either family friends or maybe his wife's family. And his wife, so his wife went with him. They stayed in the Stanley Hotel, which is still around. You can still go to it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It has its own, well, so they've leaned heavily into the Shining thing. Like, the keys for my work are on a door fob.
Yeah.
That says the Overlook Hotel, Sidewinder, Colorado.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, you can get things at their gift shop there. The Stanley Hotel has its own interesting backstory that you can go into on an episode of Lore with Aaron Mankey.
Hmm.
It's another podcast where he details the whole backstory of that hotel. Like, it's way too much to get into here.
But it has a jaded past?
But it has a pretty dark past.
Yeah, okay.
Apparently, it was towards the end of the season when they were there, so he and his wife were the only guests in the hotel.
That's gotta be weird.
So it was just the staff and him.
Yeah.
I
can see where he can draw experience from that into this book.
Yeah, well, like, and he, when they were there, he recounts in one of the places that I looked in, eating in the dining room, and how eerie it was, because this was a dining room that's supposed to hold, like, 100 people, and it was just them.
Yeah.
And how eerie that feeling was. So he apparently spent a lot of his time at the bar. Bartender's name was Grady.
Oh.
Which is kind of funny.
That is interesting.
It says that while his wife was sleeping, he, having insomnia, would walk the halls, went to the bar, spoke with a bartender named Grady.
Yeah.
One of the nights, he had a nightmare that woke him up where it was of his son running from a fire hose that was trying to attack him.
Ah.
And when he woke up, he lit a cigarette, looked out the window, and formulated the story, and by the time that cigarette was gone, which is 6 or 7 minutes, maybe,
yeah,
he had the entire story in his head.
Nice. Oh, wow. That, yeah. I mean, he is a fantastic storyteller.
He is. Yeah. I think his strength is in looking at the mundane in life and twisting it.
Yeah, making it supernatural.
Yeah. Yeah. His editor actually discouraged publishing the book.
Really?
He thought that King would get typecast as a horror author.
I mean, he is.
He is now, but, like, he writes more than just horror.
Yeah.
Like I said, his strength is in twisting the mundane into the supernatural.
Which lends itself to horror, so.
Yeah. So, yeah, the book itself is divided into 5 parts.
Mm-hmm.
Part 1 is Prefatory Matters.
Yep.
It mainly follows Jack Torrance doing a job interview at the hotel at the Overlook.
Yeah.
With Ullman. He describes Ullman as an officious little prick.
Yeah.
And then there's this interaction he has with the caretaker. He has an interaction with a caretaker where he's describing, you know, the things you have to do to make sure that the house is okay or the hotel is okay.
Yeah, you know, maintain the boiler.
Yeah.
Make sure that everything's in its place. Check up on, like, particular rooms and stuff like that.
So. Yeah. Now, the boiler pressure is interesting because reading it, like, it's very ham-handedly like, this is going to come up later.
Yeah, it's like, this boiler can explode. It's like, oh, okay.
Like, because, yeah,
boiler
the caretaker,
exploding.
Well, the caretaker even says, like, yeah, I wouldn't walk near, like, it says it'll go up to 200 PSI, but I wouldn't go near it if it were at, like, 130. It's like, that's going to come back.
That's foreshadowing, kids.
That's foreshadowing.
Yeah.
This is also the introduction of Danny, his son. I think Danny is written really well as a kid. It's very believable.
Yeah, it's definitely like a kid with strange habits. And you kind of sort of figure out, oh, well, he has these supernatural powers. It's also sort of explained what Jack does, you know, that he's a teacher, that he's trying to write this play that he's, you know, putting up. And I know that we were kind of talking off mic about the incident in the book with Jack and Danny.
Yes, yeah. So there is an incident where, you know, Jack is a published author, but he's also a teacher. He's not a professional writer necessarily. He can't pay the bills solely by writing.
So he teaches.
Which and
actually a couple of writers do. Like there are
lots of writers do that. Because it's increasingly difficult to just be a writer. But
because I believe Stephen King actually does that or did that previously.
Yes, when he taught high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just like Jack, although I think he taught public school. I don't think he taught private.
And Jack is also an alcoholic, which
he is. He's a white, what's referred to as a white knuckle alcoholic, where he's going sober without any infrastructure to help him.
Yeah, where he doesn't, like, he's not going to AA meetings, he doesn't have a support structure or anything like that. He's just gritting his teeth and fighting off this the sickness.
Yeah. Now Jack has an incident with Danny that looms large in the story of the Torrance family.
Mm-hmm.
Danny, as a child, was playing or something near where Jack was grading papers and knocked over his beer, I think, on these papers. Yeah. And so he got angry and jerked Jack up, or jerked Danny up by his arm and broke it.
Yeah, by trying to pull him away. And again, you know, this, I guess, isn't a uncommon thing where a lot of parents try to, like...
Yeah, because kids are weak.
And that's the thing, is, like, you don't understand how fragile a kid is. Like, they're fragile, but they're very resilient. Like, they'll fall down, you know, scrape their ankle or, like, break their arm, but, you know, they recover pretty fast. But, like, again, as an adult, you don't realize how much force you're putting on a particular kid. And this actually happens a lot in real life.
Yeah. Now, to compound this, Jack also has a drinking problem, and he... The incident with in which he goes to Colorado in the first place to be this caretaker, it'll give him a chance to cut himself off from society. He thinks go cold turkey and work on his play.
Yeah, because there's a scene in the book where they're doing a tour, and they tour through the bar area.
Yeah.
And the guy's basically like, we have no alcohol. All the alcohol is gone.
Yeah.
And Jack's character is elated by this news because he's going to be cut off cold turkey.
And what makes him have to take another job is that he actually gets fired from the private school he's teaching at. Mm-hmm. He was also the coach of the debate team. One of the kids who was on debate team had a horrible stutter, and so Jack tells him, no, you can't be on debate team, which sucks. Like, that's a shitty thing to do.
Yeah.
But this kid also, he caught this kid slashing his tires. And so he loses his temper, because Jack also has a temper problem.
Yeah.
And beats this kid bloody.
Yeah.
So the school fires him. His drinking buddy is one of the board members of the school.
Yeah.
And another professor. And he sets him up, this friend of his, Al, sets him up with a job as the caretaker at this hotel, because Al is also on the foundation of this board for this hotel.
Yeah. And the hotel also has a very jaded past, and when he's going through the whole...
which we'll get to in another thing, because there's a whole series of events that
but there's foreshadowing, because the guy who's interviewing Jack is basically asking him, oh, do you have a family? Are you able to do this to separate them from society?
Yeah, because in the job interview, he's told specifically, it's during the job interview.
Yeah.
He's told specifically, the previous caretaker, had a family, and he beat them all to death with an implement.
Because he basically succumbed to cabin fever.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, is like, cabin fever runs rampant in here because you're cut off from society.
Yeah, for like...
There's only a radio there.
Yeah, like 6 months out of the year.
Yeah.
The roads are just completely snowed on, or snowed in, and there's no help around, and it's just the three of you in this hotel.
Yeah. And the only communication that you have is this, like, radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part two is closing day, and it's when the Torrance family is moving in, but it's also when Dick Halloran is introduced.
Yes.
And you kind of find out what The Shining is. Mm-hmm. Because they never... I mean, they say it in the movie, but in the book, they go into it a little bit further, where...
Yeah, they defined it. They pretty much tell you, like, what the abilities are.
Yeah, you basically know right off the bat, you can see dead people, you can talk with people without using your lips.
Yeah, you have telepathy, and...
You can kind of pick up on other people's emotions, stuff like that.
Yeah, and that you have a connection to, like... spirits and ghosts and things along those lines.
Yeah.
It's a little bit... In one of our podcasts, we talk about, like, hard magic versus soft magic.
Yeah.
In the movie, it's more soft, and in the book, it's more hard. It's defined. where, Dick is sort of talking to Danny and says, oh, you have this ability. I also have this ability. And they start talking to each other telepathically.
Yeah, and you find out that Danny has an extremely powerful ability, because Halloran reacts, it says in the book, as if he was shot with a gun.
Yeah.
When Danny just says, hey! Like, it explodes in his head, and he, like, it's to the point that it's painful.
Yeah, his power level was high versus... Yeah,
it's over 9,000.
Wow.
So part three is called The Wasp's Nest.
Mm-hmm.
This part is interesting. So it's not quite snowed in yet, and Wendy is able to take Danny into town and get groceries and stuff like that. Now, the hotel is stocked with food for the caretaker. More than they would ever need, just because they're there for several months.
And all of the staff are gone now.
It's just them.
Yeah.
And
again, Dick was like, we'll be in communication, like, if you need me.
Yeah, this radio calls the Rangers.
Yeah.
And
he was talking to them about the actual, like, telepathic communication.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was like, if you need me, you can just always talk to me telepathically.
Yeah, because Dick, having The Shining as well, knows the hotel's past.
Yeah.
He's experienced some things like this, but he's also an adult. So he, I think, has a little bit more control, even though he's not as powerful.
Yeah,
so
he has kind of block training. Out. He's able to, like, train with it, but he also, understands that there are supernatural things happening.
Yeah, so he's very nervous about leaving this family.
Yeah, and again, I think they talk about that particular room,
in the movie, it's 237.
Yeah.
In the book, it's 217. And the reason they changed it is that the Stanley Hotel actually has a room 217. That's the room that King and his wife stayed in.
Oh, so that's why they changed.
They asked Warner Brothers to change that room number because they didn't want to lose business. They thought they would scare people away.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, that's why it's 237 in the movie.
Interesting. Yeah.
So,
Dick does warn him about that room.
Yeah, he tells him to stay away from it.
Yeah.
He tells Danny to stay away from it.
Because he also senses the ghostly evil presence. In that room. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this chapter directly references a scene, but it's more metaphorical. It's when the troubles start to happen.
Yeah.
So Danny and Wendy are in town. Jack is taking care of the house, reshingling.
Yeah.
Doing and he comes across a wasp nest. Yeah. And so he uses a bug bomb and wipes out the wasps. And when Danny and Wendy come home, he has this empty wasp nest that, you know, just nothing in anymore. He's cleared it. Could be used as a metaphor for the house. Like, there's
nothing.
There's nothing there. He gives it to Danny to hang up in his room because apparently his dad also did this. I didn't know this was a thing that people did.
Yeah,
I don't know if it is a thing.
Yeah. I mean, I've had the deal with a wasp nest before. Have you?
No.
Oh, yeah. It sucks.
Yeah, I can imagine.
you basically shoot off that bomb and then you run.
Yeah, I think my dad said one time when he was a kid on the farm that his family was on, that they one of the guys that worked on the farm found a wasp nest, and there was a cow farm. It was a meat farm, not a dairy farm. And you know, this guy, there was a watering hole for cows.
Yeah.
And so the guy grabbed the wasp nest and ran for the watering hole and
holding that one.
Yeah.
Woo.
Because they're coming out of the bottom, so if you angle it, you can get in the water where they won't sting you, and you drown the nest, and you get rid of it.
I understand that, but you're probably getting stung like 20 times.
Probably, at least. Because they're usually high up where you can't get to them.
Yeah, yeah.
They're
usually like around your roof or on a tall tree or something along those lines.
Right. Yeah. Which, foreshadowing.
Yeah, foreshadowing.
The wasps, as soon as they get hung up in Danny's room, there are suddenly wasps in this nest. Mm-hmm. And they sting Danny while he's asleep. He wakes up being stung by wasps. Yeah. I feel like Jack has a weird, greedy reaction to this that I don't like, because yeah. he starts talking about, we gotta take photos, and we're gonna sue the shit out of this bug bomb.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's the wrong reaction when your kid has just been, had the shit stung out of him.
Yeah, like, he doesn't have any sort of empathy for his kid. He's like, this is a way to make some money.
Yeah.
Because, again, you know, he's kind of in hard times. It's... Right now, he is banking on this play that he's writing, because he knows that he's not going to have this particular job for a long time. Like, he's going to be a caretaker for the winter season, but when he gets back to his home, he's not going to have the job that he had as a teacher. He really is banking on this play, so when he finds... Danny stung, he's like, oh, this is a way to make money.
Instead Cash of
like,
cow.
Yeah. Instead of like, oh, my son is hurt. I should be concerned about my son's well-being.
Right, right. Yeah. Now, the woman in 217, Mrs. Massey,
yep.
This is where she first... Because Danny's playing and he goes into the room.
Yeah.
And...
Again, you know, when he's being warned not to.
Yeah. And sees Mrs. Massey as this bloated corpse in the bathroom.
Yeah, which is kind of a scene in the actual movie. Not Danny actually seeing it, but a bloated corpse in the bathroom.
Yeah, and in the movie, I think Jack interacts with Mrs. Massey, but I don't think... Like, in the book, if I remember right, because it's... I'm a couple past this at this point.
Oh, really?
In the, in the book, if I remember right, Danny is screaming about the woman in 217 after being catatonic for a little bit. And she's horrified because she thinks, she's like, we're the only ones in this hotel.
Yeah.
And so sends Jack to go figure out what's going on. Yeah. And he doesn't interact with her. Like, the room is empty.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I think it's because it's the hotel trying to...
isolate and confuse.
Yeah. And its main focus is actually on Danny at first.
Yeah.
Like, it's trying to control Danny. Because there's a point in time, I'm not sure if it's this chat or this section or the next section, but Wendy decides, like, I'm done. I'm going to leave.
It's
I'm going
next
to.
Section.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Where she's basically makes the right decision of, like, I'm going to leave. I'm going to take Danny with me. You know, Jack, you can do this by yourself. I'm going to leave. Where Danny starts, like, I guess it's the shining intuition in him.
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh, I need to stay here and, like, help my father, because if I'm not here...
It will get him.
Yeah.
This is also the section where Jack finds a scrapbook in the attic.
Right, yeah, and he starts becoming obsessed with the history. Yeah,
because then the plan is, oh, I'm going to write a book about this. This is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because the hotel was the image that the hotel puts out, or the staff puts out about the hotel, is that it is an up-class a classy place where presidents came.
Mm-hmm.
But the scrapbook that's in the attic, compiled by who? The hotel itself?
Yeah. I never thought about that.
Who put this scrapbook together?
Yeah.
Because you'd think the hotel staff would burn it if they knew about it.
I actually never thought about that. Like, who did put that scrapbook together?
It depicts... It's newspaper clippings and things like that where it's recounting the sordid past of the hotel, where it was more than likely used for gangsters and alcohol, bootleggers, criminals. Al Capone stayed there. There's a story about gangsters getting shot up, prostitutes in the hotel, stuff like that.
Yes.
Just really seedy things that build up over time, like bad memories almost.
Yeah.
That the hotel has sunk into it.
Mm-hmm.
These hidden things that kind of permeate its existence.
Yeah.
Part four. Snowbound.
Yeah.
Danny is still catatonic, I think, from Mrs. Massey.
Mm-hmm.
The hotel really starts messing with Jack's head.
Yeah, I feel like it realizes that
he's the weakest. Yeah.
That he is the weakest. And Wendy is a solid character, as she is sort of like being the anchor of the group.
Yeah.
Where she is, you know, going through and she's bringing anchoring people to reality. And she's the one who's like really consoling Danny on this whole situation. Where, you know, Jack is more become obsessed with this history and become obsessed with his writing. She is the one who's really taking care of Danny.
Yeah, like, and, you know, we discuss it some in the movie coverage, but honestly, like, it goes back again to what I was saying in that episode where, you know, the two different perspectives on this movie, as they're written, is that Kubrick is interested in not in the minutiae of raising a family, because he was older when he made the movie.
Yeah.
He had been married for decades.
Mm-hmm.
He had adult children. When Stephen King was writing this, he was a new father and a new husband.
Yeah.
His own father was not present in his life. And so he had no framework for how to be a parent.
Yeah, what to do as a father.
He also had a drinking problem. Yeah. Again, a drinking and drug problem.
And again, you can see a lot of similarities between King and Jack.
Yeah. And so I feel like that's the reason that Wendy's stronger in this. She's set up as an equal to Jack in a marriage. Like, she's his wife, his partner.
Yeah. So there's a lot of implication that there is spousal abuse in this relationship.
There is. But yeah, because of his drinking, you know, King, like, domestic violence runs through this book as a through line. And yeah. I want to say that I think I said it to you off mic, I was reading an interview with King where he was talking about when he first had kids, and he did not know how angry you could get at your kids, which to me makes me think that when he was drinking, did he lose his temper and beat his kids?
I mean, and again, you don't know.
You don't know. He's never said that. No one's ever said it or made an issue of it or brought it up. But I feel like that's implied heavily.
But I will specify, neither me nor Zach have kids. We do not have kids.
Don't know.
So we are not, we don't have any experience in that particular, like, area. You know, I've never raised a kid, so I don't know how that is being around a particular person for 24 hours. I mean, that kid is, you know, looking up to you as a role model.
Yeah.
And you have to be this role model for this kid all the time.
Yeah.
And of course, we're all human and we have
sometimes you need some fucking quiet time.
And sometimes you have lapse in judgment. I'm not trying to justify people's reactions or stuff like that. But I can understand where Stephen King is coming from, and I can understand why this is a concept of the book, because it's very unique and it's very interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is an underline of spousal abuse where Wendy is kind of afraid of Jack, and she's afraid for Danny.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
because Jack's already broke. Because and I like the way that Jack and Wendy are portrayed in this, mm-hmm. where they'll have arguments where she'll start to bring up how he broke Danny's arm.
Yeah.
And he'll fire back. Like, you can tell it's an argument they've had before where he fires back, the arm, when am I ever going to live the fucking arm down?
Yeah. But it's interesting because in the book, Wendy is such a stronger character.
Yeah.
I feel like she doesn't take a lot of Jack's bullshit that she does in the movie, where she kind of like shuts down and she accepts this is Jack. You know, I'm married to this guy, so I need to sort of placate him. Yeah. Like, I feel in the book she doesn't placate him. She's pushes back on Jack.
Yeah, well, she's an individualized person. So I wholeheartedly fall under Stephen King's criticism of the movie, but I also see why she was portrayed that way in the movie. Like,
there's a reason. And the book are so much different.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like, yes, they're telling a similar story, but it's not the same story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is where the hotel starts messing with Jack's head by bringing in Lloyd and the bar.
Yeah. And he's going to the bar. He realizes that there's drinks there, and he starts drinking.
Yeah.
He starts dancing with people. And there's that one scene with the girl who takes off her dress.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is she the one who's up in the room?
I don't think that's Mrs. Massey.
Okay. No. Okay.
This is also a section where because the thing is, in this book, it follows Jack around while he's doing caretaking. Like, he could have very easily not written about those parts, but I feel like leaving those parts in are good, because it's like, it establishes the mundane tasks that he's doing to keep the hotel up.
Exactly. So, like, and that he hasn't, like, forsaken these tasks.
Yeah, so, like, he's there's a scene in here where he's trimming the topiary, which are landscape art that you don't really see anymore, but
and the hotel can be like of animals and stuff like that.
The hotel has hedge animals that are topiary, and they come alive, which is creepy as hell. I read this book when I was in like fifth or sixth grade.
Oh wow, you're that young.
I started reading Stephen King because I mean he writes so that it's very easy to understand.
It's a very accessible book. I actually read it for the first time when I was preparing for this podcast.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. I felt like it was very accessible.
Yeah.
He doesn't, use complex words or, particular things that you find hard to read. It's the very smooth transition, and it's a very smooth
It's not
read.
Convoluted. He has a very distinct writing style.
Yeah.
Like, my wife doesn't like the way Stephen King writes, because she says that everyone sounds like truckers.
Oh, really?
Like, they're just foul-mouthed, and there's no real substance to what they're saying. I feel like that's one of his strengths, because it makes it very easy to write for a popular audience.
Yeah, I would...
Anyone can pick up one of his doorstop books, like this, or The Stand, and pick up what he's putting down, you know?
I would agree with you.
But yeah, these hedge animals come alive and almost kill Jack.
Yep.
Which, again... it just messes with his head, because he, after the incident, he's just like, I tripped over bushes.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because how do you rationalize hedge animals coming to life?
And again, he's just trying to, maintain this sanity for his family. Just letting them know that I'm not crazy, but I kind of am crazy.
Yeah, which, I mean, is a good analogy of white knuckling.
Yeah.
Being what they call a dry drunk.
Yeah.
You're not drinking alcohol, but you still maintain the same behaviors.
Yeah. Where you're still kind of lying. You're still
wanting. Yeah. And then this is also the chapter where Danny wakes up and calls Halloran with The Shining.
Yeah.
And so where he's Dick Halloran has left at this point.
He's in Florida.
He's in Florida. He's in Miami, I think. Yeah.
Miami.
Because he's a professional chef.
He's the head chef for the hotel.
Yeah, like, so when there's an off season, like in Colorado, like, no one's going in the winter, but people are in Miami for the winter. So he has a job in Miami at this hotel.
Yeah.
During the summer, when it's super hot, so spring and summer, he goes to Colorado.
Yeah.
It follows where people would vacation.
And Danny's kind of, I think he understands what's happening at this moment, where he understands that the hotel is kind of messing with his father. and he needs somebody with the experience that Dick has. So he reaches out with him.
So Halloran then makes his way back to Colorado.
Yeah.
Part five is matters of life and death. Mm-hmm. This is where, so Halloran hears Danny in Florida and leaves to rescue the family.
Yes.
And it chronicles his journey of, like, at this point in the story, you can't get up to the Overlook.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy at all to get up there. So he takes a flight to the nearest town in Colorado and then rents a snowcat, right?
Yeah,
he rents a snowcat, which is just, it's an all-terrain vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing that he does in the movie, where he rents one of those particular things and he drives it up to the hotel.
Yeah. This is also where the house has completely manipulated Jack and has him fully under its possession.
Yeah. Where basically the house is telling him that he needs to deal with his family.
Yeah.
And it tells him through, like, a series of events.
Yeah. So go through those.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one through the actual bar when he's sitting and he's, like, talking with everybody. Because he ends up talking with the actual other caretaker, right?
Yeah, Grady.
Yeah, where Grady was basically saying, this is sort of what needs to happen. You need to, like, take care of your family. And by take care of your family, he means kill the family. So Jack ends up getting a mallet.
It's a rook mallet.
Yeah.
It's not the axe in the movie, and a roque mallet is basically a croquet mallet.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit longer, is my understanding.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit wider on the head, but it's, like, Googling pictures of it, but it's a
croquet mallet. Yeah. And so, he's going, and he's basically determined that he's going to kill off his family, because it's the best thing for the hotel. And again, I think he was going through the mundane of, like, fixing up the hotel, because the hotel kind of, like, pushed him towards that, because the hotel is in it for the hotel, where it's trying to maintain its sense of purpose, where it's trying to, like, make sure that particular things happen, where it maintains and keeps, you know, being in a hotel, but where it's trying to push Jack to eliminate his family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like a scene. There's a scene when it corners Danny.
Yeah.
And
this Jack, is one of my favorite scenes, too.
Yeah, it's really cool. I really want to see what this would look like if it were done with, like, modern CG effects and stuff.
Because, again, Jack is possessed by the hotel at this moment.
Yeah, he is not in control. Himself.
He does not have any control over his body. He is completely taken over by the madness of the hotel.
Yeah. And so, for a second, when Danny pleading with him for his life, Jack kind of rises up, and the hotel forces him to take the mallet, and he beats his own face off.
He does. But there is, before that, a second that Jack becomes himself.
Yeah.
And he apologizes to Danny. He's like,
which I think is a reference to a serial abuser of, like, I'm sorry, baby, I'm never going to do it again. And no, that's a lie. Like, you're going to lose control again.
Yeah. And again, you go back to alcoholism, where, you know, being an alcohol, or not an alcohol, being an alcoholic, drug? Yeah, there are moments in your life where you have those sober moments. They're far and, you know, infrequent.
Yeah.
But there are those moments where you kind of have this realization of, oh, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And then you sort of, like, plead to the people around you in your life that, like, oh, I'm not going to drink. I'm going to change. I'm going to be better. But it's a disease.
Yeah.
And you can say all of these things, but you're trapped.
Yeah.
And Jack is trapped by the hotel. So he does, like, come out of it for a split second, start pleading with Danny.
Yeah.
But then, yes, the hotel takes back control of Jack. And I think it's a move that the hotel does to show Danny, like, how much control they have of Jack when they start smashing his face. And then becomes that, like, whirling...
It's this whirling blob of crazy. Like, it's just really, really cool. It's described very well.
Yeah, I think Stephen King does a fantastic job of describing it.
Yeah. And then the book, you know, like I said, it follows Jack around where Jack is doing the mundane tasks of his job. He's he's doing the things that he's employed there to do, takes care of his family, whatever. When the hotel possesses him, Jack stops following him doing these things.
Yeah. So
so one of the things that's important is to let the steam off of the boiler pressure. Again, this is foreshadowing. The hotel hasn't been doing these mundane tasks, and so the way the book ends is that Jack, at the end, sacrifices himself to save the family.
Well, like, yeah, and you forget about Dick. Dick does come to
Dick
the
does hope. Come and rescue Wendy and Danny.
Yeah. Like, he does come there, and he does realize, oh, shit is happening in this hotel. Let me get these two out.
Yeah. And so it's not like in the movie where Danny leads Jack into the maze and he freezes to death.
Yeah.
Which is, like, it's completely him just, like, there's no sacrifice on his end. Like, no willing sacrifice on his end in the book.
Because Jack has just succumbed to madness.
Yeah.
And then you see at the very end of that movie that scene with his, you know, smiling face frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a fantastic scene that still gives me goosebumps to this day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the book ends, like I said, because the hotel hasn't been maintaining these tasks.
Yeah. So the boiler ends up exploding.
Exploding. And so I really like the analogy that King is making here between being sober and being in control and being drunk. Eventually, just like the incident where Jack beat a student bloody, if you lose control and give up to your
primal
addiction
needs.
Your alcoholism, your needs or whatever,
eventually
you stop doing the things that let you maintain and you succumb to whatever that is. So, like, in this book, the equivalent is the boiler room blowing up. Like, it can't take any more of the pressure, and it blows up, and that's when it's the problem.
Yeah.
But there are steps along the way that make the big problem happen, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, these are things that you know, bottle up over time and come to a head, so to speak.
And I agree. I wholeheartedly agree that, like, this is sort of an analogy for that, where you forget to maintain yourself. With a lot of, you know, people who suffer from alcoholism, they forget to maintain their health, and then just things just boil over until they explode and become a very big issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's how the book ends. The Wendy and Danny go with Halloran. And just kind of follow him around. Like, he goes from place to place. I think they end up in New England.
Yeah.
In the book, right?
Yeah. Because, again, he's teaching Danny about The Shining.
Yeah, how to control The Shining and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's kind of left open-ended a bit.
Yeah.
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 I did not expect him to write a sequel to it.
Yes, which that is the next book club book.
Yeah.
Which we'll go into in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But for movie time, instead of casting...
Since it's already
a movie. It's already a movie. We've already talked about it at length. So if you jam this episode in with the movie one, I think that covers
Yeah, that covers
movie
most
time
of it.
For
yeah.
this one.
Yeah.
I just have to say again, like, I love both of these pieces of media, even though they're drastically different.
I do, and I think that you have to look at them drastically different as well. Because I know that we didn't touch too much of it in this, but Wendy is a much stronger character. She's a character who actually stands up to Jack a lot of times in the book.
Yeah.
Where in the movie, she's more of just a foil to Jack.
Yeah.
To show us, you know, a grounded person in reality.
Yeah, she spends a lot of the time running away from him. But in this book...
Yeah, she confronts
him. She confronts him, like, to the point that he smacks her with that mallet and breaks her leg.
Exactly, yeah. Where, you know, she is... has to recover after all of this events.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so with that, my grade for this book is a B+.
Yes. I would also give it a B+. I really enjoyed the book. Again, I thought it was... So, the first 50 pages were a little slow for me, but after that, I think it really picks up, and it's a quick read. Even though it's about 300 pages long?
My copy was about 400.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's a pretty hefty book.
It's a hefty book, but it moves along
very quickly. It moves fast, yeah.
The thing about the first part being boring is I feel like that's intentional.
It's a setup.
It's supposed to give you... a sense of the world so that it can ratchet up the tension.
Yeah.
Like the boiler room that's going to explode.
Yeah. And I think Stephen King is a fantastic writer. I think his descriptions are great.
Yeah.
I think that he spends a lot of time focusing on what needs to be focused on. Yeah. And it does give you that weird tension feeling to it. Because there were a lot of times when I read it, I would get... to an end point, and I would want to continue reading it because I wanted to know what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was that,
it's a page turner.
It is. You have that, like, tension, and you have that, like, need to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With that, the book club book now, normally we alternate.
Yeah.
We're doing it a little bit different with this one because it does have a sequel.
It does, which was written about, 14 years? Or
no, it's a long... So this came out in 77.
Okay.
Dr. Sleep came out, I think, in 2012?
Wow, really?
Yeah, 2013.
I haven't read the book yet. I need to read it.
Yeah,
So
basically, the... King basically gave his audience at some press event that he was doing, or a talk he was giving. He said, you know, go online, vote, whatever.
Yeah.
I got an idea. How many of you want to see what happens to Danny after 30 years? And how many of you want to see a sequel to one of the Roland stories from The Dark Tower?
Yeah.
Both of them ended up getting written because he's a prolific bastard
and
writes a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But Dr. Sleep, I think, is the one that won out. That Dr. Sleep is the name of the sequel to this. It does pick up 40 years after, or 30 years after, where Danny Danny is Jack's age.
Yeah, and doesn't he suffer from the same...
we'll get into that.
Okay. but it's interesting, as a writer, writing a particular story and then picking up that story 30 years later, like, because your writing style has changed. You know, a lot of writers have notes when they write particular stories. I'm not sure if he had, like, all the notes that he wrote down when he was writing The Shining.
I like to think that he just keeps it in his head.
Still,
he probably,
like,
paces it out.
Yeah,
being honest.
But yeah, it's going to be interesting. And again, you know, I really enjoyed reading The Shining, and I hope that, you know, Dr. Sleep can continue that hype.
Oh yeah.
Though, I mean, it is a sequel, and sometimes sequels fall flat.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a while. We'll give you a chance to read the book.
Yeah.
But that's the next book Let us know if you have any questions. Hit us up on Gmail at backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
That's right, and we're going to be at two conventions.
Yes, 221 BCon, April 5th through 7th.
Yeah.
And then Outlanticon, which is May 10th through 12th. We have all that on our Facebook page at Backrow Super Show. It's four separate words.
Yeah, so check out those conventions, see if it's something that you dig, and if it is, join us.
Yeah. Come by, say hello. We have another couple things that are coming up, but we'll share all that stuff on the Facebook.
Yeah, so be sure to follow us and like us. And
yeah, take the time to answer one of the Nerd Fight polls and follow that bracket, because we do bracket updates.
Yep.
Where we pit two IP properties against each other, and you determine who wins.
Who is the winner?
Who's the winner? So, yeah, with that, we will be back next week. I don't know what's going up in this release schedule, because it'll be a couple weeks in advance.
Yeah, so it'll be something.
It'll be something cool. It may actually be 221 BCon coverage.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, with that, we will see you guys next time.
Later.
Bye.